Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are now tuned to the Sitting in the Park show. Today is a special show because I'm going to be doing an interview with a group, I guess mainly from East Chicago and the Gary area, the Enchanting Enchanters. So right now up in the studio, we have more people than I've ever had in the studio. It's like people falling out the door. So they'll be up in here. We have both members of the vocal group and the band who will be talking about the history of their group, and we'll be playing their records, and they'll be telling their story. So hopefully it should be a good show. So first of all, does everyone in here, can they all introduce themselves?
Of course.
Okay.
Dennis Harvey.
Okay.
War Eagle.
Okay.
Bob Celestin.
Arliss Johnson.
Art Lopez.
Alex Alvarez.
Okay, and so one thing that's interesting about your group is you're the first group that I'm interviewing that is a mixed race group. All the other groups I've interviewed so far, they're all African Americans, but you have African American and Hispanic and white people all in your group together. So that's one interesting piece of information.
Rainbow group.
So you guys, first of all, are you all from the East Chicago area?
Yeah, I think just about all of us from East Chicago.
Okay, so so one thing is, so part of you here were in the band and part of you sang in the vocal group. So first, I'm interested in the people that sang. How did you guys get started singing, first of all?
To Mr. Dennis Harvey.
Mr. Dennis Harvey.
Yeah, we formed a group down in the basement of Robert Celestine's home.
Okay.
We were known as the Basement Boys.
So when was that?
Oh, around 1965.
So did you guys know, did you guys, so were you in high school at the time?
Right.
Okay, what did you guys all go to the same school?
We all went to the same school, right.
Wait, what school did you guys go to?
East Chicago, Washington.
Okay, and that's the same school. I think the Opals all went there too, is that right?
I think they, yeah.
Okay, so had you guys sang before, or you just guys started harmonizing together? What was the story? How did you guys get started?
Yeah, Dennis had been in
I was in a group. I even forget the name of the group. It was so long ago, but I was in a group before.
Just some high school kids.
Right.
And you never recorded anything?
No.
And so who decided to form the group, and how did you guys all know each other?
I think Guatek can probably talk on that one.
Robert Celestine.
Actually, what happened, Dennis was with a group, and there was complications. They broke up.
Okay.
We used to always hang around at the lake and down in my basement.
Okay.
Then he came by one time out of nowhere and he said, "Hey, come on, you guys are going to sing." We said, "Well, we don't sing." He said, "You are." So then he's the one that trained us. We had no knowledge of singing. So he worked with us for, I don't know how long. Maybe 6 months. And just he gave us vocal lessons, so to speak. And he put the group together. He taught us everything we knew in singing.
So he pretty much got you to sing, and you were singing. That's interesting.
We had no knowledge about anything. We laughed when he told us.
So how did you guys live near each other? How did you all know each other?
Through school.
Okay.
Yeah. Same neighborhood. Same neighborhood.
Were you the same year in school? Were you all about the same year?
Well, me and Arliss were in the same year.
What were you, like, freshman, junior? What year were you when you started?
We were seniors.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you were, and were the other guys younger or older than you?
Younger.
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't worry, I was a freshman at the time.
Okay. So how long did you guys sort of sing together before you, so did you form, so first of all, we just talked about how the group formed. So which four, you have five people in the vocal group?
Right.
And you always had the same five people from the start. They started off in the basement.
Right.
Your basement. So who were the five people that were in the vocal group?
It was Dennis, War Eagle, myself, Arliss, and Lucio Barajas.
Okay.
He's not here, Petro.
Okay. Well, what's his name? His name is Lucio
Barajas.
How do you spell that?
I would guess
B-A-R-A-J-A-S. Barajas.
Oh, okay, cool.
Means cards.
All right. He's a dealer. A wheeler and a dealer.
Playing the cards.
He's
right.
He's a superstar now. He's with a big band now, so they make it now. Yeah, he plays with together. Yeah.
So that was around 1965, you said you guys started singing. And So before we talk some more, one thing that's interesting is I got a recording from War Eagle's cousin of you guys just singing a cappella in the basement, which is pretty cool. It's not something I have on other groups. It's just them rehearsing as kids. And so in this recording, you're singing a couple fantastic songs. You're singing I Need You and Peace of Mind. So before you guys ultimately, we'll get to that later in the story, but you guys ended up recording a song, No One in This World. But before that, you guys were just sort of rehearsing in the basement. So I'm going to play just this practice tape, if that's okay. And we'll talk some more.
This was our first time that we, really started singing.
Okay, so again, this is, so you, and did you guys even have a name initially at this point?
I think we were the VJs.
VJs, okay, well, I'll play this just basement recording and we'll talk some more.
I need a love that'll stick by me when the time gets tough.
I need you.
And when the world gets dark and the road gets rocky and rough,
I need you.
Your kiss is sweeter than the taste of honey. Richer than the richest gold. You're the kind of girl that I always wanted. The kind I would like to. Ooh, I need you. Is alright too.
It's alright.
When it comes to a lifetime, baby, I need a love like you. Ooh, I need you. Ooh, I need you. Ooh, I need you. I need you. Chips are down to be stealing
land. I need you.
And when the lady took my hand, that's a sign that you stand by me.
I need you.
Your love is warmer than the summer sunset, dimmer than the morning dew. Of all the things that I want in this world, I'll be satisfied with just
tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. So what you just heard was, I guess it was like a practice tape of the group that's up in here now, and you weren't even called the Enchanters yet, right? You said you were called the VJs. So where was that just recorded, in the same basement you talked about practicing in, pretty much?
Well, actually, it was upstairs in a bedroom, you know.
Okay. Yeah. So how long had you been together before you recorded that?
Oh, maybe just a few months.
Okay.
Right.
And that was just recorded. It was weird that it was. I noticed it was stereo, but it was just recorded like on a reel to reel. And it must have been around 66, just because those songs that you were singing came out around 1960, okay. Sometime around 66, 67. Those fantastic songs. So were you big fans of them, or was it just something that was out at the time that you liked?
Yeah, actually, Wario usually brought those to us, right? Philadelphia type sound.
Well, that was Chicago, actually.
Yes, Chicago.
Yeah, Fantastics.
No, they were playing those on the radio.
Okay, so it was just something that was out on the radio at the time. Okay. Okay, cool. Well, so you guys said you had a name initially. What was the name of your group again?
The BJs.
Okay. How'd you come up? Was it named after the record label, or how'd you come up with that name?
Actually, I think it was from a label.
Okay.
I think what happened is they were getting ready for an engagement, and they had to come up with a name. And they said, "Hey, we got to come up with some kind of name." So I don't know if they thought it would just be a temporary name, but I think there was a time constraint there to come up with a name.
So you guys actually did you? So you practiced for a while, and you actually ended up doing shows. Like you said, you had an engagement. Like what kind of shows did you do? Were talent shows? Like,
yeah, the first good one.
Yeah.
You want at the Regal? You can tell about it. Yeah.
No, the one I'm talking about, I remember the guys getting ready for an engagement at the Boys Club.
Captain House,
there you go.
Where was that?
Captain House. That was in East Chicago.
Okay.
And they were going to be inviting all the clubs from the Captain House, and it was going to be their first engagement.
So were there other...
Society there.
Okay. So were there other singing groups in your school at the time that you kind of competed with? Were you one of the only groups in... the school at the time, like what was going on?
No, there were other groups in the school, but we didn't compete against them.
Okay.
But there were quite a few groups in school.
Okay. But you were, aside from the Opals, you were one of the few East Chicago groups that ended up recording, is that right?
Right.
Okay. So so let's get back to, so did you ultimately, you had a band and a group. How long did it take to get all of that together?
You guys
want to
comment?
I'll get on it. I'm Alex Alvarez, saxophonist, just about the same age as the younger portion of the singing group. The band members, some of us had played together since 13, 12 years old, but since we're from the Latin aspect of the city, we were playing music that was Mexican and Puerto Rican, salsa kind of thing. And we were playing just as an instrumental group.
Okay. So did your band have a name?
The Donnells, as I recall.
Okay.
Right.
So were all the band members, they were all from the same band, is that right?
Right.
Okay.
And then we kept adding the members.
Okay.
So we had Arthur Lopez, the bass player, and then we had Tony Curiel, who was a lawyer here in Chicago, but he did pass away a while back. And he was a guitarist. And then we had Leo Gonzalez, who was a drummer.
Okay.
And so what we did, we backed up singers that went on talent shows.
Okay.
And so that was a unique thing because no one had bands. They were all a cappella mostly.
Okay.
But we added that dimension of the musical band behind them.
So, but at the time you were playing behind other people, and then how'd you get hooked up with, were you guys still called the VJs at the time?
Yeah, I remember.
How'd you guys get hooked up with the VJs?
Talent show.
Talent show, yeah.
Okay.
We played it, this is Art Lopez, we played at the talent show at our, I believe it was at our high school, Washington High School.
Right.
And they were on the bill too. And we backed up a singer, I think his name was Billy Carter.
Right.
And we did the song Stand By Me.
Okay.
It was out at the time. And I believe that we won the talent show.
Yeah, you did.
We did win the talent show. And we liked what they did. And I assumed that they liked what we did too and stuff. And they went back later on and discussed us joining forces. And that's basically how things got started, you know.
So what year was that, you think? Like 66, 67?
About 67, I think, in 67.
Well, 66.
66, the talent show?
So were most of you still in high school at the time?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Okay.
10th graders, some of us.
So before that, you said you played Latin music. What type of, were they also at talent shows? They were like Latin performances
certainly,
too?
Certainly, but some of us started really young. We had a professor that came out of Laredo, Texas, an older man that had huge orchestras that played throughout Mexico, and he was a retired man, and he came and he was giving private lessons to musicians, little kids that played musical instruments. And so I have a sister, and I was clarinetist, and my sister was a pianist.
Okay.
And he was also simultaneously teaching Arthur guitar and his brother accordion. So he would score music for us as little kids, and then he brought us all together, four of us, and he took us to a big dance that they were top-notch musicians, and we played. So then from then on, we kept evolving as a musical entity, instrumental. And then we were able to catch up to these gentlemen that were singing because we were already well-honed and, private lessons for years.
So I want to play the next record. I want to play something that I guess would showcase the talents of the band. So this is, and then we'll get to actually how the record got recorded. So this is the B-side of the record you guys actually recorded as the Enchaining Enchainers, and this is a funk record that you guys recorded called Boss Action. So here you could really hear sort of the band work out on the record. So this is the Enchaining Enchainers with Boss Action. Okay, that was just the Enchaining Enchainers with Boss Action. And if you're just tuning in, up here in the studio right now, we have members of both the band and the vocal group, the Enchaining Enchainers, talking about their story. So right before playing that record, we were talking about how the band was previously sort of an independent band that played behind like a cappella groups at talent shows and did also not only R&B music but like Tex-Mex style Latin music. And then you guys ended up hooking up with the vocal group who I guess were the VJs at the time at a talent show. So first of all, did you guys change your name right after that, or what's the story with that?
It was a democratic society. We did a lot of voting and
okay.
arguing as to what it was going to be. Yeah, payoff. And certainly we got together and we agreed, and then it was a very systematic organizational situation because we knew we had to look good. We knew we had to do certain kinds of music that was appealing to the population.
Okay. So you guys ultimately became one, like, cohesive vocal group, self-contained, with a band.
Exactly.
So, first of all, were you guys still practicing in the same basement?
Yeah, basement, yeah.
It was pretty crowded down there with all the band in there. So, did you guys start doing, bigger shows? What was the story? Did you guys just practice together for a while? Like, what happened?
No question. You know, as a young kid, I was playing with polka bands and nightclubs and bars at 13 years old.
Okay.
South Chicago. And so I was used to being able to deal the business aspect of things.
Okay.
So therefore, you know, we would take turns being leaders of a group and doing the business aspect while still doing the musical aspect. And we became very successful at making this a business entity and doing big shows, 300-500 people at a time, dances, carrying buses throughout the state, masses of young kids that wanted to follow us.
So what types of shows did you do? Were they at, they weren't like, were they nightclubs, were they bars? You said they were dances, like what types of shows were they?
Just a multitude. They were dances, weddings, they were bar mitzvahs, they were...
Okay.
Proms, high school dances,
college fraternities.
Okay, so and that all happened. Were you still in high school even when you were doing that?
Most definitely.
Yeah. Okay, yeah,
most of us were.
And then
can I throw something in the mix?
Sure.
Before you go, one of the things that I remember, I don't know how well you guys remember this, when we would sing a cappella, people would suggest, "Man, it'd be nice if you guys had a band behind you." And we're like, we don't need a band. We're a vocal group. And then their friends would also say, "Man, you guys got to have a good band. It'd be nice if you guys had some vocals." My brother Rich was instrumental in organizing us to get together.
Okay. Was he at that talent show where he hooked you guys up?
We all hung out at the same place down in the basement. That was our little hangout, you know.
Okay.
And so he would work both sides, you know, like a good politician, you know, in the good sense. He was the organizer. So he was very instrumental in getting us to get a band behind us and getting the band to have some vocals. So I just want to throw that in the mix as well.
Yeah. Okay. And then, so where were most of the shows that you did? Were they in East Chicago, Gary area? Did you travel a lot?
We started off locally. Forgive me, fellas, but jump in anytime you want. But we had a manager, Bill Passmore. Without Bill, you know, he was very instrumental in taking
Amen.
Us under his
Amen.
Wing.
Yeah,
and he was like Uncle Bill.
How'd you get hooked up with him?
We knew him from the city. Artis, you want to jump in on that? You used to drive with Bill and then go to the office?
Yeah, he ran like a job corps in Chicago, and we met through trying to get a job, you know.
Okay.
And, he was an amputee award
winner. Yeah, he was an amputee, and so I ended up being his driver.
Okay.
And so that's how he came in contact with
me. So you told him you had a band, and you're
right.
He's like, "I'll manage you guys."
Yeah.
And that was that before you even became the Enchanters, or that was after you became?
After.
Okay. And so I'm interested in also the stage shows that you did. Like, what, you obviously did different types of shows and for lots of different types of audiences. Like, did you have a stage routine? Or did you do, like, all R&B music or mix it up based on the audience? What was your stage show like?
It was a lot like the Temptations, you know. We started with a lot of choreography in that, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. And Warrigal used to, like, design our choreography for us, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
And did the band have a big part in the stage show too? Because I've talked to other like sort of band groups, and they had parts where there was the band did like a James Brown type thing, and then the group came out. I don't know how you had it set up.
Well, what we did is we had we tailored the show to the customer, to the audience.
Okay.
And there were times we played Mexican weddings.
Okay.
And but we knew that the majority of the following there wanted to hear the music that was being played, rhythm and blues music, and they also wanted to hear some Latin music, so we mixed it up.
Okay.
But the fact is, we did have various shows. I mean, we would set up depending on who was coming, but certainly the band would get out there first, mostly, and play some nice instrumental sets, and then prepping for the singers to come out, and we had a various choreographed presentations.
And,
they were down to the minute, right?
And you had nice suits too, right?
Oh, well, yeah. We prided on dressing well. Yeah.
And so, how often did you guys practice together?
Five days a week. Right.
Yeah.
Beginning.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what we practice. Loved doing. That was our hangout.
Yeah, we used to practice. I remember early in the morning, go to Artist's house about 10 o'clock and leave about 1 or 2, and then come back at 6 o'clock and start all over again. I mean, we were so into what we were doing. We loved it so much. We didn't care. The time just flew by, you know.
Okay.
It's great, you know.
So what I want to do now is I want to play the record you actually ended up recording, and then we could talk about up to that point how you ended up getting this record released. So this is a real nice ballad that you guys recorded. And it got released on a label called Benmo Keith, which was Gordon Keith and a few other people, but the same Gary label that put out the Jackson 5, the Steel Town label. So I'll play the record. This is called No One in This World, and then we'll talk some more. Okay, that was just the Enchanting Enchanters with the very first record that they actually released. and that was called No One in This World. And if you're just tuning in, we had the Enchanting Chanters up in here, both members of the band and the singing group, talking about their music. So just before playing this record, we talked about how you guys did a stage show, and then you had a manager named Bill Passmore, is that right? And then, so what's the story? How did you end up getting a recording deal and releasing a record?
What do you guys remember?
I think it was through Bill, wasn't it?
Okay.
I believe.
From what I can recall, Still Records with Gordon Keith had recorded Jackson 5.
Okay.
Became a big hit, Big Boy.
Okay.
I'm a big boy now. And when their contract expired, they were looking for another local group.
Okay.
To record. And word was out that we had a pretty good band, and they came out, talked with us, and... Then we signed a 1-year contract with them, and so that's how things evolved for us to work with them.
So I think Big Boy came out like around 68, 69, something like that. So is that when you remember recording this record, probably around that time?
It was probably the following year after their contract had ran out.
Okay.
And they had no longer had the Jackson 5 under contract. And then they discussed recording with us, and then we followed up with a record with their company.
Okay. So, and I know Ben Mokeith, it was the same label as Steeltown, which was Gordon Keith. And I know Ben is Ben Brown. And Mo is Maurice Rogers. Do you remember those guys at all? Did you know Gordon?
Yeah.
Did you know Gordon Keith though?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you mainly dealt with him.
In fact, he's over at Dennis's church. Certainly, he keeps in contact with them.
He actually he still lives at the same address that's on the Jackson 5 records he put out. So,
and how about Willie Spencer?
Yeah, that's what I wanted. So that's another person that has I don't know if he actually wrote him, but he has writing credits on both sides of the record. Yeah. So who was Willie Spencer?
He was part of their team.
Okay.
One of their partners in their business.
And he did write those.
He was a co-writer.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
He wrote the lyrics, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, and he gave us some artistic liberties musically and vocally to make some minor changes.
Okay. So
you know, you were talking about stages, what kind of events we play. Well, we did a contest, Battle of the Bands.
Battle of the Bands. Explain.
So what's the story with that?
We just had a local guy, you know, people throw dances all the time, and he wanted to throw a dance and, you know, just make some money. And so he had them in mind. They were very popular out of Gary. We were popular out of East Chicago, basically same style of music. And he asked us, he said, hey, would you guys mind if I bill it a Battle of the Bands, even though we know it's not? And I said, hey, whatever you want to do to make it attractive, you know.
Was that before the record came out or after the record came out?
Before it came out.
Okay. And another thing I wanted to ask is, where did you record that record, No One in This World?
Was that Bud Preston?
Bud Preston's in Gary, yeah.
Okay.
It's on Washington Street, remember?
Was it?
Small studio on Washington,
And Bud Preston's the guy that recorded pretty much all the music that came out of that area, not just even soul music, but rock and even polka, like every type of music that came out of the area, pretty much was all recorded at his studio.
Right, that's great. He was the man.
Okay, so so you recorded that record, and did it get any play on the radio?
Yeah.
Which one is this now?
The No One in This World.
Yes.
Okay. So did you hear it in, were you spending, it was mainly in East Chicago or in Gary area, you heard it on the radio?
The WMPP also out of... Harvey, Illinois.
Chicago.
Yeah. WMPP.
Some of the Chicago stations played.
And did you guys start to do any more shows now that you had a record out? Or was it just pretty much the same?
DJ did get a few gigs for us, and we did play a few places.
And did you do this record or Boss Action at your shows?
Certainly, we did it.
Oh, we did our original stuff.
We did original stuff.
At the time, that was the style of the music. As you can tell, it kind of had a James Brown flavor.
Okay.
We tried to. It was dancing music. So, yeah, we definitely played our original material.
Okay. So then, you were doing shows and you had this record out, and pretty much your contract expired and you didn't record anymore. So, actually, did you end up recording any more that was unreleased at that time for Gordon Keith?
Yeah, not for Gordon Keith.
Okay.
We moved on, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, like I have, which I'll play if I get a chance, some of the tracks, some of the things that, like, you guys made me a CD of some of, like, the, it sounds like practice tapes almost. I'm not sure, because they're not originals. They're all covers.
Yeah, they're demo on tapes.
Yeah. Promo demo. So did you record any more original records?
Yes.
Okay. They just were never released. I mean, we have one record that I'm going to play. The Struggle was released. So let's get to that. So you recorded a second 45 that came out on Atco, which is Atlantic Records, called The Struggler. And I'm actually, let me play the record, and then we could talk more about what the story was, how it came out. And one other thing I wanted to ask you was, so on this record that I'm going to play now, you're billed as The Enchanters. But on the other record, you're billed as The Enchanting Enchanters. So why did you shorten the name?
I have no idea.
Okay.
We don't know.
Okay.
Attention to detail. Yeah.
So, but you always billed yourself as The Enchanting Enchanters before that?
Correct.
Okay, so this is The Struggler and by The Enchanters, and then after this we'll talk more. Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are listening to the Sitting in the Park show, and if you're just tuning in, we are in the middle of an interview with the East Chicago group, The Enchanting Enchanters, and the record I just played was the second record they released, which actually came out on Atlantic Records, and it was called The Struggler. So do you guys remember at all what year that might have come out? Probably early 70s sometime?
It was
early 70s.
Yeah. Early 70s.
I think it might have been around 70 or 71,
yeah,
something like that.
70,
so what's the story? So first of all, I see on the record it's written by an H. Farrig. So, and so I want to know who that was and how did you get to Atlantic Records?
H stands for Henry.
Okay.
Also officially known as PJ.
Okay.
He came one day to practice. Somebody had given some information regarding a band, helping him to contact us, and he came down. He said he'd like to record some records with us. Were we interested? We said yes, and developed a friendship and a relationship, and went into the studio, Chess Records, and got an opportunity as young people to go into the studio and make another record.
So you came to Chicago to record it in Chess Studios. And did you sign a contract with Atlantic Records? Like, what was the... What happened, or was it all just through Henry Farrig produced it?
Yeah, it was all through Henry Farrig, and I don't know all the technicalities of how he was able to get the ATCO label on there, so that I'm not familiar with, that business part of it.
Okay, and was that the only cut you recorded for them? And the B-side, obviously, Wind and Sea, were those the only things you recorded when you were in that studio?
Yeah, from that studio, yeah.
Okay. And so did that record get any play in Chicago? Do you know the story behind that?
Yeah, I know we got some play, and I think we I don't know what the terminology is, where they kind of piloted in different cities to see if it's going to take off.
Okay, they like promo it to DJs or something? Okay.
So they did get some play in some other cities just to see if it would take off, but they wanted to see what the reaction would be here in the Chicagoland area. So, yeah, we got some play time on some major stations for a while.
And one thing that's interesting about that record is... that another Henry Farrig recorded another version of it and released it on Gordon Key's Steeltown label. And the other version of it was by a group called The Drifters. And you guys were telling me earlier that that's actually The Drifters, Under the Boardwalk.
The Drifters, yeah.
Okay. And which version came out first?
Ours. Yeah.
Ours first.
Okay. So you guys cut it first, and then The Drifters covered the record that you did. So... So what happened after that? Like, how did the group stay together for a long time, do shows? Because that was the last record you released, I think, as the Enchanting Enchanters.
Right. Well, you know, the Vietnam War was going on at the time.
Okay.
And some of us had the draft numbers.
Oh, some of you got drafted.
Right.
That's a common story of why groups broke up.
Yeah. So people had to go to college and do other things. So it was very difficult at that stage to keep cohesive because of those factors.
So about how many, how long, like to what year did the group stay together, you think?
72.
Yeah, I think it was a 5-year stretch. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now...
We came back a couple times where we just did like a reunion.
Little concerts.
Right. But the main thing that happened was a bunch of people got drafted and it kind of hurt the group when that happened. So we have a lot of people in here. I want to go through and sort of tell people's different stories of what they did musically after the group split up. So, War Eagle, I know you did a lot of stuff, so let's just do you at the end.
Yeah, I was going to suggest that as well.
Okay. So let's go through the members. I'm just wondering, so did anyone else stay involved with music or do anything else?
Yeah,
after?
An artist,
eh? Yeah, it was maybe 10 years later, so we got back together and started a band called Love Quest.
Okay.
And then we had another band, which was Timepiece, and they're still going right now.
Are you still in the band?
No, we're not. We're not in them.
Arnest and us were Love Quest.
Okay.
Then we formed Timepiece
and Arthur.
With Arthur.
Okay, and that was all.
Arnest left, and me and Arthur continued with the original Timepiece as there, because I left them.
You should mention that your son.
Yeah, we had our sons. His son and sang. Eventually, he became lead singer of the band, and my son was a drummer.
Okay.
Yeah, so we continued in that vein, you know.
And that was all in the 70s, or even into...
No, it went into the 80s. This one.
Okay.
So I've been gone about 6 years from track. And Arthur, I think he just left.
I think 84 we started Love Quest, and then...
So what type of music did you guys play?
And we stayed in the same vein. We stayed with Motown sound.
A lot of rhythm and blues, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of funk.
And you did shows around the city, pretty much? Or,
right, yes.
Okay.
we were more so into the lounge thing and that, you know, and then we got into doing weddings and stuff like that.
Okay. And did anyone else who's here now stay involved with music besides War Eagle?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
I've been playing, basically, I don't remember leaving music. I think I played continually and stuff with other bands and stuff. But
okay.
Before Love Quest, we started in the Together group, right?
Mm-hmm.
War Eagle, myself, mm-hmm. and a couple other guys, Ray Flores and George Rodan, who are still in that band.
Yeah, that's a group still going.
Yeah, they've been together with now about 30-some years, in about 30 years.
Close to
yeah, they've been having a long, very good group, too. But
matter of fact, our fifth singer is their lead singer.
right now, you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, right, so now. We kind of like spawned different bands and stuff, and from the after the Together thing, I dropped out of music for about a year, and then we started with the Love Quest.
Right.
And then that's when we started the other band,
Timepiece,
yeah.
But a lot of you just, especially the musicians, continue to play in and even the singers, you guys continue to play in bands and sing pretty much. And so let's get to War Eagle now. I know that you were in a bunch of different groups after the Enchanters. So what happened with that?
Just the Lord was able to, the Lord blessed me that I was able to continue and do something that I enjoy and have a passion for. I had, I consider a very high honor of being invited to sing with Puzzle People.
Okay.
They were a local group out of East Chicago.
Okay. Were they also sort of a mixed race group?
No, they were usually an all-black group because of the style of music that they did. And that was part of the reason that I considered it a high honor, you know,
okay.
to be invited to sing in their group because of the vocal styles and to be a dancer and do that style of choreography.
Did you sing lead in that group, too?
They had five lead singers.
Okay. When was that? Was that in the late 70s, the 80s, the early 70s?
When the Enchanters broke up, one of our mutual friends between the Puzzle People and myself had said, hey, if you want to try and get War Eagle, you better talk to him now because the Enchanters are broke up. So I knew the guys from growing up with them and came knocking at my door and said, hey, we'd like to invite you to be in our group. And I said, I had some fun with them. I said, anybody have a problem with me singing? Because, you know, and they're like, no, we know what you can do. You know, you're...
So you were that was the first group you were in after the Enchanters broke up, is that right? You were in
No, I made one small stop with a group called Master Plan out of Gary.
Okay.
And that was a Latin black group.
Okay.
And I was with them for maybe about a year.
Okay.
And then I went into the service, and then from there I joined Puzzle People.
Okay, so mid-70s, something like that, you were in Puzzle People?
Yeah, I would guess mid-70s and late-70s, yeah.
And then what did you do after that?
I formed Together Band.
Okay.
They had invited me down. One of the guys, one of our vocals, Beto, from the Enchanters, who, as we said, is presently with Together, he was leaving the group, and they were called Gypsy at the time. And so they invited me down, and there were some big changes made, so we got a new name, and brought in some mutual friends, and so started a new group, and that's when that was the starting of Together Band.
And did you actually record anything as the Together Band?
Yeah, I think there's a song there.
Okay.
That you have somewhere there.
Okay.
It's called It's You.
Okay.
And we're pretty proud of that one.
When did that come out, in the 80s?
That was in the 80s.
Okay. And you were in some other groups too, is that right?
Yeah, I would help out different groups, but basically those were the main groups, the Enchanters, Master Plan, Puzzle People, Together Band for about 15 years.
Stormy Weather, a little while, huh?
Yeah, I forgot about Stormy Weather. Helped out my buddy Henry Ferrick and sang with them for a while. We recorded a CD with them called Voice Activated.
Okay.
I was on the doo-wop circuit with him for a while. We did some TV stuff. We recorded a CD.
So Stormy Weather, were you like a doo-wop revival type of group? Is that the main type of sound you were after with that group?
They still presently do the doo-wop concerts.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Henry Ferrick's a promoter for that type of music now, too?
He's a promoter, and he has his own group, and he's one of the singers in that group.
Okay. And I understand you have a band now, too, with a different name, right?
That's correct. We have a new band called Mystic Fire.
Okay.
We're really excited about that group.
Okay, what's the story with your group now?
Mystic Fire, Arthur's with me. It's like a Blues Brothers reunion over here.
Okay.
Back with my brother that we have a lot of history together from the Enchanters in high school to also play an End of Together band for many years. He went with Timepiece for a while, then I went into retirement, and then we came back and started this group, and we were able to have Arthur join us, come into the fold with Mystic Fire, so it's a reunion for us. And so we're just out playing and having some fun.
You have a daughter singing with you?
Yeah, my daughter has grown up, and she sings in Mystic Fire. So that gives us an opportunity to have a real wide repertoire and a musical spectrum and just a lot of variety, a lot of diversity.
Okay. And are you guys doing shows in the Chicago area?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Do you have any shows coming up that people might be able to see you at?
Right now, we just finished a lot of outdoor venues, which is cool. In the summertime, we do a lot of festivals. We're at Navy Pier every year. We're usually there twice in June, twice in July, once or twice in August. We do some arena shows. We do a lot of outdoor festivals. Almost got an opportunity to play Viva Chicago and be an opening act there.
Okay.
So the group is still new. We're still establishing ourselves and our name. I think we have an offer to play for the Hispanic Chicago Chamber of Commerce. So, yeah, we're getting some more venues there.
So people should look out for that or anything you release, too.
Hottest group around.
So
amen.
So I'm going to play another record, and then we can talk a little bit more. I'm going to play, this is, I mentioned before, a recording of some demo tapes you had. This is a cover you guys did of the Mad Lad song, Whatever Hurts You.
Cool.
I can see a sign of sadness. I know.
Okay, that was just the Enchanting Enchanters with their version of Whatever Hurts You. And as I understand it, that song was actually recorded in a studio, is that right?
That's correct, Gary.
But we don't have time to play them all, but you had I have a whole CD full of all the things you recorded in this demo session, and they're all covers, like you do Light My Fire and some instrumentals and some other R&B songs of the day. And we were just talking about how the purpose of the demo, it was like for promotional material for your shows, right? Like you gave. So is that pretty much why you recorded this stuff?
Yeah, you had to mail stuff down to if somebody wanted to hire you from out of town.
Okay.
If you know anything about the band, you send pictures, you send your song list, and you send them a tape so they could hear what you sound like.
Yeah. Okay. So first of all, I have to say thanks so much for everybody for coming down.
Thank you.
It was a great interview. And does anyone have any sort of last words for the audience?
Right. I just want to mention that music for us was a venue to take massive energies to bring them to a positive side when there was so many negativities going on in the neighborhoods. And we did a lot of good things for a lot of young people that wanted to hang around us and listen to our music, and it was a great opportunity.
Okay. Well, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, thank you, Bob.
Okay, cool. So, thanks again.